Welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have author and publicist Irene Levy-Baker. And Irene, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Laura. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to having a great discussion because we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, Philadelphia. And you mentioned before the show began, you've been here 25 years. I've been here 21 years. And you got a couple of great books for anyone who loves Philadelphia or has someone who's coming to visit. But let's get started first with, who the heck are you? Give me the elevator pitch.
I moved to Philadelphia, as you mentioned, in 1991. I immediately started working for the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. I spent nearly a decade there. And one of my jobs was giving tours to travel writers. Going to museums and restaurants and attractions and historic sites, and they paid me for that. And it was wonderful. Then I started my own public relations firm, Spotlight Public Relations. So for the last 15-plus years, I've been working with Philadelphia restaurants and businesses in the hospitality industry. And then in 2016, I became an author. I wrote 100 Things to Do in Philadelphia Before You Die, really based on a lot of the things I learned working one-on-one with attractions and chefs and restaurants and hotels. And this past year, I wrote Unique Eats and Eateries of Philadelphia, my second book, which is about the stories behind Philadelphia chefs and restaurants.
And again, before the show began, I just kind of jokingly asked you, could you have written either one of these two books about Philadelphia 25 years ago?
Not only could I not have done it, but Philadelphia has become such a fabulous city. It's really grown and flourished in the last 25 years. We can be proud of what we have here.
I can remember that it was like a desert in some neighborhoods, and you could go blocks and blocks without something to do, or there'd be a little mecca of some great little restaurants, and then 20 blocks of no attraction at all.
Think about what we have now. We have restaurants with outside dining that wasn't around back then, and great public spaces like Dilworth Park and Spruce Street Harbor Park and places, Schuylkill Banks, places that really make us proud to be Philadelphians.
Expand on that a little bit, because I didn't even think about that, but you've just mentioned things that have shown up in the last 5 years.
I love Dilworth Park, which is on the west side of City Hall. Do you remember when that used to be a parking lot? And now there's an ice skating rink. There's, activities. There's an interactive fountain. There's a restaurant. Now it's like a great gathering place.
And, of course, when we're talking about the restaurant scene, we're getting a lot of notice on the national front with James Beard winners and Top Chef winners and participants left and right.
Yeah, now I think that everyone else around the country knows what we've known for a long time, that Philadelphia has great restaurants.
Okay, so let's go into this, though. You worked with a travel bureau. You worked with the convention bureau. So you know how important it is to sell the city to other people. So, I mean, like, how important is the restaurant industry to us? If you say you were back at the Visitors and Convention Center Bureau and you're talking to a group of podiatrists who are looking at various cities, I mean, how would you pitch the things to do before you die and unique eats and eateries?
Well, they say that about 80% of people travel for food. And whether you're coming for a convention or a vacation, there's three meals a day, and Philadelphia has great places to do it. Everyone who comes here wants to get a cheesesteak, but we're far and wide, much more than cheesesteaks these days. As you mentioned, people like Greg Vernick, who's opened Vetri, who's a James Beard Award winner, Michael Solomonov, who has Zahav and many other restaurants, they're all winning national awards now.
You know, it's funny. James Corrado was in just a couple of weeks ago, and gosh, I love him to death, but we were chatting about, what do people think of when they think of Philadelphia? And he says, well, when they come to the Independence Visitor Center, no matter what language they speak, there are two words that they can, and that is Rocky and cheesesteak.
Right. Yeah, and I do recommend in my books, one of the questions people ask me at book talks is, where do I recommend for cheesesteaks? And I do mention some of the hometown favorites that we all have. But I do think people should go to 9th Street, go to the corner where Pat's and Gino's or catty corner each other and have that experience of, you know, send your friend across the street, split halves so you can try both, lean forward so you don't get it dripping down your shirt, and watch the limousines and the celebrities and the politicians pull up and try their cheesesteaks.
Everybody here in Philadelphia does have an opinion. Now, I'm a vegetarian, so I can say, honestly, I don't care, because I haven't tasted any of the contenders for best cheesesteak. But, you know, a lot of Philadelphians, though, they have that. They love a cheesesteak, a particular one. They're not going to go to another one. They send and they take all their visitors to that particular
Definitely.
One. Yeah. But so if you're, I'm a Philadelphian, or maybe I'm living off on the main line somewhere, or I'm somewhere in southern New Jersey, or I'm listening in Delaware, and I want to experience Philadelphia. Let's go back to 100 Things to Do Before You Die and Unique Eats and Eateries and kind of combine. How would you tell somebody to experience Philadelphia? And
well,
include food and things to do.
So some of the things that make Philadelphia unique, some of my favorite attractions that you won't find anywhere else are Magic Gardens at 10th and South. It's Isaiah Zagar's outside art installation. It's a mosaic installation made of tiles and found bicycle parts and statues and found objects, and you walk through it, and I mean, you'll find a lot of his murals around South Street area, but that's a one-of-a-kind experience that you won't see elsewhere. Spruce Street Harbor Park, which was named one of the best urban parks in the country, with its hammocks and lights that change colors and barges with food and drinks. Another unique area. Certainly you want to hit Independence National Historic Park with the historic things going on there. And Reading Terminal Market is always one of my big favorites, combining an attraction and food. And it's unlike other food courts. I almost hate to call it that. It's more like a great urban food hall. Many of those kiosks have been in the same family for many generations. You'll find prepared food. You can do your grocery shopping there. You'll find gifts and crafts. I mean, all of those things are unique to our great city.
The Reading Terminal Market was just cited as
yeah, I think it was one of the five best food markets in the country.
That was it.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, Spruce Street within the last 5 years, and Dilworth has been, again, opened in the last 3 years. Could you rewrite 100 Things to Do in Philadelphia Before You Die already?
Well, there's always lots of new things happening, so that's great. It's a great place to visit, and it's a great place to live. It just keeps getting better for us.
And, of course, all of these new things just keep reminding us that travel and tourism and us, too, going and enjoying these sites drives our economy with jobs, et cetera.
Not only do all these places make it a great place to live and a lot of fun, but they bring a lot to the area as far as jobs, as you mentioned, and money. 43.3 million, with an M, people visited the region in 2017. And they spent $7.1 billion with a B. And what did they spend that on, Laura? Food and beverage, lodging, transportation, retail, recreation. And guess what? All those things created jobs for people. So not only do we get to go to these places, but all this tourism is creating lots of jobs.
And these jobs don't just mean the servers. It means the cooks. It means the cab drivers, the Uber drivers.
Housekeepers in hotels.
Housekeepers.
The great thing about hotels, by the way, is that they're places where you can really grow your career. If you do well, you'll keep getting promoted, you know, through the ranks. So those are entry-level jobs where you can really grow and learn.
And again, without these restaurants and all these attractions, those would dry up.
So we have a lot more to thank those chefs for besides good food, which we do thank them for.
How would you tailor a great Saturday or a weekday off school for somebody with little kids and you got to feed them too?
Well, so one of the things in the 100 Things to Do in Philadelphia Before You Die book, in the back of the book, I have itineraries for different age groups, including young families, families with teens, dating, empty nesters, things that are free, for this very reason. And one of my favorite things to do for families is, let's start the day. Let's start the day with breakfast. And you know you have to have breakfast at Reading or lunch at Reading Terminal Market. It's great for families. It's reasonably priced. Everyone can pick what they want. So I would definitely eat there for one of my meals. And then I would go to Franklin Square, where there is not only a carousel, an old-fashioned carousel, but there's also a miniature golf course. But instead of golfing around hills, tunnels, and pirates, like you do at the shore, you're golfing around Philadelphia icons, like a Liberty Bell, the Chinese Friendship Gate, the Rocky Steps, or as they're officially called, the Philadelphia Museum of Art Steps, Elfrith's Alley. Have your kids take a picture of themselves in front of each of those icons. So, and then spend the afternoon taking pictures of them in front of all the real things. So if you can imagine taking a picture of your kid in front of the miniature Chinese Friendship Gate at the Putt-Putt, then when you go to the real one in Chinatown, which is many stories high, it's very exciting for them, and they make great social media. They make great social media updates, and the kids really get excited about going to some of those places to get their pictures taken and see them as well.
That is a cool idea. That's what makes you the pro.
The neat thing is it's good for elementary school little kids, but teenagers have fun doing it too.
I do it. The day of Facebook, I do that.
Yeah. I'd like to hop over to something. You mentioned that you're a vegetarian. In Unique Eats and Eateries of Philadelphia, my book that tells the stories behind Philadelphia restaurants, I not only tell the story of Veg, which is Rick Landau and Kate Jacoby's restaurant, which is not only one of the best vegetarian restaurants in the country, but one of the best restaurants, period. I also include a list of vegetarian and vegan restaurants in the book, because so many people these days are looking for that kind of cuisine. And I tried to make the book as useful as possible by including lists like that, gluten-free restaurants. And then I went into places for brunch, places for private parties, to make that book really useful for people.
Boy, you did it at the right time, too, when you just mentioned the gluten part. So many people just keep asking and asking. So, and this book is available now. This one is your brand new one, right?
That's right.
When did it come out? Give it a little plug.
Unique Eats and Eatery of Philadelphia came out in fall of 2018, so it's pretty much hot off the press. And that tells stories, love stories, stories of restaurants that survived earthquakes, fires, prohibition, all kinds of stories that even if you know the restaurant, you may not know the stories behind them, and that's what makes it sort of fun. And it includes tips like how to snag reservations at Philadelphia's how to snag reservations at restaurants where it's hard to get reservations, or how to get into secret speakeasies.
How about some tips for getting into those trendy restaurants?
One thing people always complain about is being able to get reservations at all these great restaurants they hear about. It's a good kind of problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the book has 10 tips on how to get reservations at Philadelphia's restaurants. And I'd like to share a couple of them with you.
Oh, please do. And yeah. I'm going to be writing them all down.
So number one is we all tend to go to OpenTable first. If you can't find a reservation on OpenTable, call the restaurant. Restaurants don't put every reservation on OpenTable because they pay OpenTable for every reservation that comes in that way. So simply by calling, you can sometimes find reservation slots that aren't on OpenTable. That's tip number one. Tip number two is when you call your doctor, you don't say, "Is Dr. Lewis available Thursday at 7 o'clock. You ask them when Dr. Lewis has appointments available. If there's a restaurant you really want to go to, and this will not work for your birthday and anniversary, but you can call and say, "Hey, I would really like to go to Veg. When do you have reservations available?" And they'll tell you. And if you can't make it on the date they tell you, you can ask for a couple others. But that's one way to get to some of these great trendy places you hear about that you have trouble getting in.
What a great analogy.
But you need to be willing to go beyond Saturday at 7 o'clock when everyone wants to have dinner there. Weeknights are a great night to have reservations at restaurants. The third is to follow chefs and restaurants on social media. Because very frequently, if the restaurant has a table available or a cancellation, the chef will post that on social media. And if you're the first to jump on that, then that reservation can be yours.
I would never have thought to go there for this. What a great idea.
Just don't do it when you're hungry, because they also post a lot of pictures.
But I like that it's Eats and Eateries, and it's got all the stories behind this. And of course, it was hard to get you scheduled to come in today because you're out doing the book signing still on this. It's that new of a tome. And of course, if you'd like to find out more about both books, actually, right?
Right.
100 Things to Do in Philadelphia Before You Die and Unique Eats and Eateries of Philadelphia, her new book, go to uniqueeatsphilly.com. That's uniqueeatsphilly.com. You'll find out more all about the books themselves. Irene Levy Baker herself and her business Spotlight, which we're going to talk a little bit about as well there. I'm Laura Lewis, and you are listening to Philadelphia Focus. So let's get digging back into this. How did you pick the places to include, and actually in both books? How did you come up with all of these sites and all of these restaurants?
Well, it's funny. For both books, picking the list of places was by far the hardest part. I mean, it's only 100 things to do in Philadelphia. It could have easily been 1,000 things to do in Philadelphia. So for that book, I had to be, you know, it was hard. It was hard to limit it. And I wish I could have had more things. But it's divided into 5 sections: food and drink, sports and recreation, music and entertainment, history and culture, and shopping and fashion. The longest section, of course, because it's Philadelphia, is history and culture. But the second longest is food and drink, because that's my real passion. So for the second book, how I picked the list, it was really tough. I am not a food critic. I don't review restaurants, but I'm a food detective. So I went out looking for restaurants that had 2 things: good food and good stories. And when I found both of those things, I knew, bingo, it was meant to be in the book.
You know, some of my favorite restaurants, when I take other people to it, I will actually say, well, it's not the best spaghetti you'll ever eat. Or I'll say that, oh, well, the service is kind of slow, but you're going to love this place.
There is a place like that in the book. The spaghetti there is great, but the place that's not the fastest service is Mr. Martino's Trattoria. It's on East Passyunk in South Philadelphia, and it's been there since long before that was a trendy place to be. It's been there for like 27 years. It's owned by a husband-wife team and little other help. So if they go on vacation or when Marie broke her leg, they have to close. And when I went there and I fell in love with it, it's like a little time capsule where everything's made by hand and Marie's alone in the kitchen with a 6-top burner. And after I had dinner there and fell in love with this BYOB, I told Mark, the owner, I'd really like to put it in the book. And he said, oh, please don't, because we have as much business as we can handle. We don't want to be bombarded. We don't want people coming who expect to be in and out in an hour. We want people who get what we're doing and are going to make an evening of it and enjoy our homemade Italian food. And I was sad because I really thought it was a charming gem and wanted to include it. So I wrote up the restaurant piece for the book and I sent it to Mark and I said, if you don't want to be in the book, I will respect that. However, just look at what I wrote and see if maybe you'd like to be in the book. And he read it and agreed to participate, which I was pleased about. And I'm going to share a tip about that restaurant for you. Unlike every other restaurant that you ever heard of, if you want reservations, you call and you tell them when you want to come in, what day and time, and how many are in your party. If you don't hear back, you're good. And if he can't get you in, he'll call you back and let you know. I know, crazy, right?
The reverse. Give us another story about somebody like that. What's the oldest restaurant that's in there? 27 years in Philadelphia actually isn't quite the oldest restaurant around.
One of the oldest in the book is McGillin's Old Ale House.
You suggested to me to go there over the holidays, and I did, and I was totally charmed. It was totally packed, but I wasn't the oldest person in the room, thank heavens. My husband was close, but we had a blast. But again, it's beer everywhere and a million people, but wonderful.
It is the oldest continuously operating tavern in Philadelphia and one of the oldest in the country. I'm so glad you tried it out. It's been around for 159 years, opened the year that Abe Lincoln was elected president.
And go on and tell some more.
So
give us some more stories.
It was opened by Ma and Pa McGillin in 1860. They raised their 13 children upstairs. When Pa died, Ma ran it by herself, even through Prohibition, when she locked the front door and served tea upstairs. She had a list of people that weren't allowed into the tavern because they were too rowdy, including some of Philadelphia's most prominent citizens. But she ran it up until she was in her 90s. When she died, her family, her daughter, who grew up there, sold it to the Spaniak Mullins family, who still run it today.
How did you pick these places? I mean,
story like that, it was irresistible.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, yeah. But how did you pick these places to be in the book?
Well, sometimes the stories found me. I had lunch. I went down to Kennett Square to go to the mushroom farms. And I stopped for lunch at a BYOB called Portobello Restaurant. And I loved it. In fact, it's been so successful that they've expanded into another bigger space and they're no longer BYOB. But I had lunch. I loved it. I sat down with the chef, Brett Hulbert, and his wife, Sandra, after lunch and started interviewing them and thinking they'd be someone good to put in the book. And Brett told me about his background in casinos in Atlantic City and catering. And I loved the place. I loved them, but I wasn't sure their story was bookworthy. And then, just as I was wrapping up, Sandra saw someone walk in by the window behind me and said, and ran outside and gave him a hug. And then she came back in and apologized, said, I'm so sorry, but that was Mr. King. And I just had to give him a hug. You have a quizzical look on your face, and I did too.
Yes, who's Mr. King?
I said, who's Mr. King? And she explained that the first week they opened, Mr. King came in for dinner. And as soon as he was done eating, he demanded to see the chef. And Brett and Sandra were quaking in their boots because they knew in a small town like Kennett Square, if people weren't happy with their restaurant, they would never survive. So they went out to talk to him and he said, I am not going to be a regular customer here. And Sandra's heart sank. And he said, because I'm 85 years old and I was just diagnosed with a disease and I just don't think I'm going to be around that long. And then he explained that he was a retired opera singer and he broke out in song and sang, You'll Never Walk Alone. And everyone in the restaurant turned around and applauded. And Sandra was so touched, she threw her arms around him and she said, I think you're going to kick this. And when you turn 90, I'm going to throw you a 90th birthday party. Well, it turns out just the week before my interview, Mr. King did in fact turn 90. They did in fact throw him a 90th birthday party and his family flew in from all over the country to be there.
And there was your story.
And there was my story.
So every restaurant has a story to tell. It's just up to us to find out what it is.
And I think eating in those restaurants when you know their story makes it all that much more special.
Okay, give me another story.
One of the stories I found out from doing research was about Pop's Water Ice. Pop had a push cart that he pushed around South Philadelphia, and it was heavy. And on hot days, it was a very unpleasant task. So one day, there was a heat wave, and he got up out of bed, and he was just dreading having to push this heavy water ice cart around South Philadelphia in the hot weather. And he knew, just thought it was going to be such an unpleasant day. So he sort of begrudgingly put up his garage door to get his push cart out. And lo and behold, there was already a line of people down his driveway waiting to get water ice. And he's like, Eureka, I'm an idiot. Why am I pushing this heavy push cart around South Philadelphia? People will come to me. And now, three generations later, his grandchildren are still selling water ice from the same location at 13th and Oregon, still using many of the same recipes. One of my very favorite water ice shops in Philadelphia.
How did you approach them? Did you tell them that, hey, I'm writing a book and I would like to include you in them?
Yes.
It was that easy.
Sometimes I did. I never announced myself going in because I'm not looking for anything special. I'm not looking for any freebies. I want to have the same meal that anyone walking in and any of my readers walking in would have. But sometimes afterwards, if I really loved a restaurant, I would, you know, interview them to find out what their story was.
How did you pick the places for 100 things to do in Philadelphia before you die?
Well, some things were obvious. You know, like I knew I wanted to include the major museums. I wanted to make it useful for both tourists coming to town, but also for locals, especially all those millennials and empty nesters who are moving to Center City and know Philadelphia is a great town and want to take advantage of it. Or people who get visitors and don't want to play tour guide who can just give the book to their visitors or put it on the nightstand in their guest room. So I tried to include both the obvious tourist places, but maybe some they hadn't heard of as well.
And so obviously, since you were able to convince Mark the restaurateur at Mr. Martino's that you could do this and make him happy. Is it easy to sit down with a project like this and write?
Well, I mean, sometimes it's easy. Sometimes I would get out of an interview and I would be so excited about sharing the story, or I would just so know what the story was that I would stop where I was walking on the sidewalk and right there and write it. Or I'd pull the car over and start writing phrases that were running through my head. So sometimes they were so exciting they wrote themselves. But, you know, it depends on your goal. Writing can be very solitary. The fun part for me is really this, being here with you, Laura, doing the book talks and talking about all the fun things I discovered in the book and the tips that I share.
It was kind of funny going back to Mr. Martino's that he initially did not want to be in the book. But then you also mentioned something earlier about, you know, now he's in a trendy area. And not all restaurants are that lucky to be in trendy areas where you're going to have foot traffic. And this is a great thing. If you get into a book like this, your Google search is going to go up. Everything is going to improve for you. This is a great thing when a restaurant gets included in something like this. There's a question in here somewhere. I'm going to get to it eventually. I'm working my way through towards it. So getting into a book like this is valuable advertising. But now your real business, how do you describe publicity to someone who doesn't know what publicity does for you?
Well, Philadelphia, no question, is a great restaurant town. We always have exciting new restaurants opening these days. But if you're not constantly out there promoting yourselves, it's easy to fade into the woodwork and people are looking for the shiny new thing. So I do think it's important for restaurants to stay out there for people to know all the great, interesting and things you're doing and serving.
Well, that's pretty much the same thing, though, if I'm a small shop. You know, chefs are usually the pioneer in an area. They open up a storefront, and in Philadelphia, thanks to the BYOBing, they can open up at a reasonable price. They open up a restaurant, and people start coming there, and then others take advantage of that, and suddenly they're the ones that make an area trendy. But small shops or small attractions or small venues, they need publicity as well.
Yes, sure. You know, when you have a small business, you need to stay in front of the public's eye, no question about it. Whether you get foot traffic or not, it's important to always be out there promoting yourself through public relations, through media relations, through advertising, through social media. You always want to be out there.
And of course, then the ultimate goal is to get into the next edition of 100 Things to Do Before You Die or Unique Eats and Eateries of Philadelphia, which, by the way, where can you get these books?
These books are available on my website, www.uniqueeatsphilly.com. If people tell me they heard about it on your show, I'd be happy to sign it for them before I send it out. The books are also available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, and at independent bookstores throughout the region.
And I keep seeing you listed for doing an author signing in various places.
And the list of author signings coming out up this year are also listed on uniqueeatsphilly.com.
And, of course, for any questions about your business or your writing, go there, uniqueeatsphilly.com. And here's where I say, you've made me hungry, darn you, and I want to go out and get my picture taken at all these locations. I never thought to do it. And my Facebook friends are going to really think that that's cool, and I'm not going to tell them I got the idea from you. Let them think I'm a trendsetter, but I got it from you. Irene Levy-Baker, author of 100 Things to Do in Philadelphia Before You Die, and the new one, Unique Eats and Eateries of Philadelphia, both handy books for visitors and for us alike who love Philadelphia and want to really indulge in all the great things that it has to offer for us. And you can find out more information about everything at uniqueeatsphilly.com. My guest today again, Irene Levy-Baker, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Laura.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.